The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Saint, and you're listening to Mike and Dave, my fourth favorite paranormal radio show, guys. Duo? Guys. Whatever, it doesn't matter. They're moving up in the ladder. And I love you.
Kim, what are you doing?
Well, I'm telling Mike and Dave, it's time to get on the show.
Oh, well, the Odyssey Files starts now.
Good evening, Para-X. You are listening to the Odyssey Files. I am your host, Michael O'Neill. With me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Dave Sawyering. How are you tonight, Dave?
I am tired, but good. I had a very, very busy weekend, but it was a wonderful weekend, and then a very busy work day. But I am ready to go because we didn't go last week. So I've got 2 weeks worth of energy built up. And what we're going to do tonight, we haven't done in a while. It's actually been it's been a little while. I don't have an exact date when the last time that we did a selection show or a location show. But it's been a while, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
I would say six months, whatever. I would say
it's got to be at least 6 months.
I would say six. That's what I was thinking too. Is at least 6 months that we actually did a this is some cool places, and if you're out and about, you should go check this place out for this reason. So, yeah,
right. I would like to because it's kind of I don't want to say awful, but it's what happened last week, because we actually did have a show this show.
Yes.
Planned for last week.
Yep.
And I was all ready to go, and Dave was all ready to go.
Yep.
Except, again, Skype screwed us.
Yep.
So Dave had to re-download Skype.
Yep.
And then, didn't you say your computer crashed?
Well, and then what happened? Yeah. So it said, "Hi, Dave. I'm ready to make your life miserable once again." And so once you start downloading me, your computer's going to give me some errors. And then when you try to click through the errors and then go to Skype and make it work, it's not going to. So you're going to have to reboot everything and that multiple times. And I actually was online at 6:42. And then when I finally saw Mike's face, it was about 7:04 or something like that. And he goes, "Hi. Hey, how's it going? Guess what? We're on Auto DJ." And I'm like, yeah, well, for the last 24 minutes, I've been playing again Computer Genius, which I'm not. So that didn't work so hot. So,
right. So you actually got on. Usually you let me know if you have an issue.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, we always touch base.
And you didn't. And so I'm sitting here, and it's 6:58.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm not going to do this show by myself. I'll just have, Rain and them, the show previous to us.
Yep.
Turn on the Auto DJ, and when he gets on, we'll just come in late. And I'm like, that's not a huge issue. At least there won't be dead air. So he gets on literally 5 seconds before we need to be on the air, and so I'm like, oh sweet, we can get on. And I'm about to turn off the Auto DJ. He comes on. And I can't hear a word he's saying.
That's not good. Yeah.
He can hear me, but I can't hear him. And we already did a show like that, which was terrible.
That was horrible. Yes.
Yeah. But it was pretty funny though, because I got a lot of good jokes. But, And so I'm like, well, crap. Now I have to restart my computer. And I kept getting a whole bunch of problems with my stuff. And by the time we got it all worked out, it was like 7:15, and we were like, screw it.
Yeah.
We'll just move it. Yeah. There's no reason to come in now and try to do a show after like 15 minutes.
Of
another show starting. So we moved it to this week, and here we are.
Yep.
But for those of you that listen to our show weekly, thank you very much, by the way.
Absolutely.
It's always,
yes.
It still shocks me now, yeah, even after doing this for a year, when people will contact me on the Facebook page or whatnot and be like, you know, hey, are you really love the show? You know, are you going to, are you going to update the website? Because I'm terrible at that. With the archive and stuff like that, because I want to get caught up. Love that. Never get tired of it. So, and by all means, if any of you have a topic you'd like Dave and I to tackle, send it to us. Be more than happy to do it. It'll save us some brain cells trying to do it ourselves.
We do have an absolute ton of ideas that we kind of throw past each other on a pretty regular, consistent basis. And what we're trying to do is not be repetitious in our thought patterns. So yes, I agree 100% that if anybody has like something, no matter how, even if you think it's off the wall, like, man, these guys aren't going to talk about this because this is like way out there in fringe territory. You know what? If it has some credibility to it, we will definitely discuss it. Absolutely. We'll look into it, discuss it, and we might even like contact you and have you on the show. Who knows?
That has been an idea.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But to your statement about not, you know, it's too far out left field, you know, maybe for us to talk about. Let me just point out that I did try to make the argument that Thanos was the man in the moon.
I 100% understood that conversation. Yes.
I don't think there's anything to the left of the field that we would not be willing to talk about. Just be like, you know what, man, that's too crazy, man.
No, I don't even know where the hell you came up with that idea, but, you know, no, man, we can't talk about that on a show because, seriously, that's like, no, we have to draw the line of Thanos being living inside the moon and the moon being a metal, metallic type of inner world sanctum. But, you know, you're to the left of that, and so we got to draw the line somewhere. Sorry. So
we have standards.
Yeah, we got standards. They're low, but dang it, they're there. And Thanos living in a metallic moon, that's where we draw them. That's it.
I didn't say anything about a metallic moon. I just said the moon.
Well, so. I my mind went into that, though, and then I was like, yeah, it's made of metal. Because you were talking about how you could hit a golf ball and it would sound like bounce off of like the inside repeatedly.
They're saying that the moon might be hollow.
Right. Well, that's where I got inner hollow metallic. Right. My brain works differently.
You don't say.
Yeah.
The hell you say.
Yeah. Well, you know, crazy. I've been told that once or twice.
All right. So I'm going to get into my first location, the actual topic of this show.
Yes.
Whereas you, Dave, went more personal, I kind of went more. I want to say more popular, I guess, at least popular now. The first one has been popular for like 125 years. So I'm going to start it off, and you'll probably know exactly who I'm talking about with this poem. It is obviously our finest moment of poetry. Have no idea why somebody decided to come up with this, but it is out there. Mm-hmm. So stop me if you heard this one, Dave.
Okay, I'll nod if I heard it. So,
well, that's not gonna work very well. Anyways,
I know.
So, Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. And when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times.
I hate that poem.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, it's definitely like way to the left of Ring Around the Rosie, you know. That's all I got to say on that, so.
I would like to know who would actually claim to have authored that and just have to ask that person, what was going through your head when you decided to just be like, you know what? I'm going to get clever about, you know, the horrendous murder of two innocent people. I'll write this little ditty.
Okay, time out now.
Okay.
We can't say innocent people. Because if you go back to the Lizzie Borden story that's been told forever, her dad was not an innocent person, and neither was mom, because mom knew that incestual things were going on between Lizzie and dad. And that's why they were both butchered. I'm just throwing that out there, so you can't say innocent people.
All right.
But it is a horrific poem. I'm totally on board with you with that.
But the poem sucks.
The poem sucks royally. I mean, it's royally. It's one of the top five worst poems ever written. But I can't say that her parents are innocent. That two people that died in horrific deaths, and they did die horrifically. I mean, getting bludgeoned to death with an axe in the head is a pretty vicious way to go. But as we all know, you don't just wake up one day and decide to bludgeon a family member in the head with an axe. Usually, about 99.99% of the time, there some incident occurred that created that amount of hatred. I mean, that's an intense amount of hatred, you know, honest to God. I mean, seriously, as we get serious here for a second.
Well,
it's
definitely a, it's a crime of passion, but
almost, but I mean, it's a hatred. It's like a, you know, it's a bad crime.
You want to call it a hate crime?
Well, right. I mean, I wouldn't call it a hate crime, but in its day,
beyond that,
right. But if you put it back in its day, like what we consider a hate crime today, no, it's definitely not a hate crime.
Yeah.
But if you go, if you go back to when it happened, I could label that as like a hate crime. You know what I mean? Not a gender specific or a religious background or a skin color type of hate crime, but more of a something really horrific happened to me and I really hate you and I'm going to bludgeon your head in with an axe. So,
for those of you who know about obviously the Lizzie Borden house, which I think a lot of people do, I don't think there's anybody that's interested in the paranormal that doesn't know what the Lizzie Borden house is. But a little history of it. So it's in Fall River, Massachusetts, on August 4th, 1892. So they're coming up. In fact, they just passed the, I believe, the 126th anniversary. Am I right on that one? My math?
You're close. That's all that matters.
it's close enough.
We're within a decade. I'm good with that. So it's Monday,
give or take. Yeah. Well, I'm just going off the fact that their actual website is talking about, you know, as we approach the 125th, you know, anniversary. But then again, I don't know when exactly this was last updated. So yeah, I mean, it could have been updated last year, something like that. So right. Let's just say 126th anniversary of these murders, which to this day is still unsolved, because Lizzie Borden, who was considered to be the perpetrator of this crime, mm-hmm. or suspected of it, was acquitted.
Yeah, she was the prime suspect, I believe.
She was
the prime suspect of that murder. And when she was acquitted, they had focused so much of their attention on her that by that time, and we were kind of talking about this prior to going on air, I think that a lot of the evidence and stuff like that had got contaminated because they thought they had a closed door, you know, or a closed case, you know, like she did it, blah, blah, blah. And so they got all this stuff and put her on trial. And all of a sudden, they didn't have a rock solid case. And all of the evidence that they had and things that they could have used to find the person who did it, they couldn't use it anymore.
Well, not only that, but according to what I've read, even though fingerprint testing was commonplace at that point in time, at least in Europe, the police here didn't trust its reliability. So they didn't test the prints that were on the murder weapon, which was a hatchet that was found in their basement. I know the day after or 2 days later, Lizzie was found trying to burn her dress.
Yep.
That she wore on that day. She had purchased a small axe the day before the murders took place.
Which is incriminating. I'm just gonna say that's a tad bit incriminating.
But with all of that, plus she was there. I mean, she was
at the location.
She was right. At the location. It's not like she had an alibi.
Right, no. She was not on vacation or anything. Right.
But the jury, shockingly, 90 minutes. They took 90 minutes to acquit her.
Yeah.
They figured that a sweet-looking Christian woman like her couldn't commit such a crime. So I don't know,
I don't know. That's a tough one because, you know, going back to that time period, I think honestly, and you know, I'm just going kind of off of my memory here and like history and stuff like that. I think if you go back to that time period, I mean, how many women seriously were convicted of like horrific crimes like that? Not like a poisoning crime where you can like poison somebody and run away and have it happen, but more like a bludgeoning or a stabbing, you know what I mean? Something like that. I think the numbers are like super, super low is what I'm getting at.
Right.
So.
Right. While I was reading over stuff for the show, it seems that a author by the name of Rebecca Pittman, I'm assuming she does. I never had a chance to look up a lot of her stuff, but seems that she does like a history and haunting of certain locations. I know she's done one for the Stanley Hotel. She wrote a book called The History and Haunting of Lizzie Borden. And apparently she has new evidence and photos dealing with this case. They're talking about what I didn't know was, and I didn't know a lot. I knew about the murders. I knew about her being acquitted and all this other stuff. What I didn't know was that there was the thought of, or there were people like strange men that were on their property the day of and a couple days prior to these murders. But they disappeared. Nobody knew who they were. So I guess that would put in a reasonable doubt type thing. Oh, hey, there was somebody else there. Maybe they could have done it.
So, okay. So what are we going at? 125 years, right? And where we're 125th anniversary.
Years.
Yeah. Okay. So for the last 125 years, nobody knew about a couple of dudes that showed up on the property. And right before the anniversary or right around the 125th anniversary, all of a sudden some lady writing a book miraculously digs up that there were some couple of guys that just happened to be hanging around the property 124 years, 296 days, 3 hours, and 17 minutes ago.
Now, I think the fact that there were a couple of strange guys on the property the day of, I think that is actually part of the story or part of the, I don't want to say the evidence, but part of what people knew back then. But because everybody wants to just focus on Lizzie and the fact that she was probably the one that did it or is labeled as the perpetrator of the crime, that seemed completely unimportant because nobody knew who they were, why they were there, or if they had any sort of interaction. Nobody knew how they connected to the case. And gotcha. So I think that that's gotten lost in, you know, the hundred some years of history with this case.
Okay.
What this author is saying is she has come up with interviews and police reports and all this other, come up with who they probably are, actually their identities. But the what she's claiming is that there's proof of two murder plots that same week to get to the Bordens, which I'm sorry, but in 1892, that just seems a tiny bit far. Even now, to have two murder plots against the same person by two different groups of people in the same week.
Yeah.
You've done something really, really wrong if that's the case.
Right. Or you're like ungodly wealthy and there just happens to be two different kind of criminal elements that show up haphazardly at the same time that want to take your wealth is kind of what comes to mind for me. You know, like, maybe like during the Gold Rush era, and, you know, a local bank in this little tiny town in a gold rush town in California, and they hear that they're just like pulling tons of gold out of the mine, and all of a sudden, you know, two criminal elements just happen to show up the same weekend. You know, well, they're closed on Sunday. Let's go in this Sunday. And it's like the gang from out west and the gang from out east, and they happen to show up on the same Sunday. So, yeah, that sounds kind of odd.
Now, so from what I understand, they were patriarchs. They were pretty wealthy. They
right.
had money.
They did have money, but they weren't millionaires, right? I mean, they were above comfortable.
Yes,
they were above comfortable, but they weren't it wasn't like you could go to the house and like walk out of there with a wheelbarrow full of cash. I mean, if you kill somebody, I'm just saying though, you know, right? So if you're going to kill somebody. If you're going to kill somebody in their house, wouldn't there need to be like things you could remove from the house? It isn't like you go to somebody's house and kill them and then show up at the bank and go, hey, hi, you have fingerprint ID? I have Lizzie Borden's father's hand that I chopped off with an axe. Here's the fingerprint ID to allow me to get into the safe for his safety deposit box, right? That's what I'm saying. I know that sounds ridiculous, but think about that, right? Is that if they didn't have like a ton of wealth in their home back at that time frame, why would you go in there and do that?
I don't think they were robbed. You would think that if they were after the money,
right,
they would, something would have been taken.
Jewelry, antiques, you know, whatever, right? There would have been something taken, right? An oriental rug, whatever, you know.
Yeah, so it's haunted.
It is haunted, and I think the reason that it's haunted, honestly, is because of the violence that that the true violent nature of the deaths in the house,
right?
That would be my guess. I haven't been there.
But
so.
I don't think, has it ever come out as to who, I mean, they all think that Lizzie is still there, But after the murders, she never went back there. She bought.
She didn't.
She bought another home and lived the high life the whole rest of her life and died in 1927.
Yep.
And so, I mean, if she didn't do it and she never went back to the house and lived the high life the whole rest of the time, you know, why would I don't know of anybody who has actually caught. I mean, people have had experiences there, sure, but has anybody that you know of caught any actual evidence of her being there, or are they just assuming she's there because of what happened?
I think that they're just assuming that she's there because of what happened. That would be, I have not seen any evidence myself that I would stand behind and say, this is Lizzie Borden. But that said, if she had a split personality or something to that effect, that has been a theory, I know. And so if she had like a split personality because of maybe what did allegedly happen to her with the sexual abuse thing, that maybe she created a shell around her childlike self, and then she had this protector type of thing around her and became two different individuals, and maybe she did commit the crime, and if she did, then maybe she is, you know, in the afterlife, maybe she is being punished as, you know what, you're staying at this location, and this is kind of your purgatory. You know, this is where maybe she was sent back there and it's like, you need to, I don't want to use the term come clean because that's like a modern term, but like you need to own up to what you did in order for you to move forward. Right. But because of her split personality, maybe she can't, you know, maybe the dominant killer side of her is the one that takes over whenever the innocent side that was abused, allegedly, tries to come forth and make amends for what might have happened, you know, that she doesn't have recollection of. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good theories out there. I mean, I think that's one of them. I mean, I could get behind that theory. We haven't been there yet. When we get there, we'll have the answers. It'll be figured out. We just haven't got there yet.
Right. I'm trying, because that's the one thing that I guess I just realized, because I spent a lot of time researching the actual murders, what took place.
Yeah.
Especially seeing that this author had updated evidence as to what was going on. So it occurred to me, and it came back just now as you were talking, that I haven't heard one claim. Like, I don't know what actually has been claimed to be going on there that even says it is a haunted location.
Disembodied voices, object manipulation, apparitions, cold spots.
Okay, well, I guess I could have just asked you.
Yeah. I mean, it's your normal... it's your normal kind of run of the mill. We think this place is haunted because of this.
Maybe EVP.
There's some EVPs. Yeah, there are EVPs. I've heard a couple of decent EVPs come out of there. So, okay.
All right.
Yeah, but I mean, until I get there and put my feet on the ground and spend some quality time there, I mean, I don't know. I think some of the stuff that's out there is legit. But until I see it, I don't know.
No, I completely understand.
Right, exactly. You know where I'm coming from. And I would hope that her parents, even if they did something wrong, even if the allegations are correct, even if those things that are, you know, like unspeakable happened, I would hope that they've moved on. You know, maybe they you know, made amends somehow in the afterlife, and they've been able to move on, you know. And I hope that if Lizzie's still there, and it is the case of like a split personality, I hope and pray that she, you know, is able to move forward and get out of there, you know.
Well, apparently not yet.
Well, right, but I don't like spirits being trapped in locations, you know. I mean, I don't. I want, they should be able to move forward and get their peace, you know.
Agree.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so we're going to go to commercial, and then we're going to be back with Dave's location. We each have two, but we're probably not going to get to my other one, which is perfectly fine.
And we probably won't get to my second one either, so, because mine's going to be a half hour, my first one, so.
That's right. So we're going to be back with our only location each.
Yeah, exactly.
and yeah, so you're listening to The Odyssey Files on Para X.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear. Line.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids,
artists on the call. Just think if you listen to the words of Para X.
Hi everybody, this is Chip Coffee, psychic and medium. I just wanted to let you know that when you're in the mood to get weird, you need to tune in to the Odyssey Files with two of the biggest weirdos I know, David and Michael. Take my advice. It doesn't get any weirder than that.
No, Chip, no it doesn't. In fact, he is going to be back on the show at the end of September. Yeah. It is a done deal. So, in fact, hopefully come next week, we will hopefully have a unbelievable lineup of great guests coming up in the next couple weeks. So we're definitely going to keep you updated on that one.
Yeah, next couple of months.
Next couple of months, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But we already have some that are already booked, but I'm waiting for like the full enchilada. Like we have the enchilada.
Yes.
We have the meat.
Yes.
But now we need the cheese, the lettuce, and everything else.
The sour cream.
Taco. I'm kind of just making a taco, but you know, you get the point.
You get the point, right? Because the more quality toppings you have on an enchilada or a taco, the better it is.
Yes.
So we have the core ingredients. We're adding the superior toppings.
Exactly.
Exactly.
All right. So our topic tonight, is locations that you know we kind of wanted to go more in depth with. So take it away, Dave. We did mine.
All right. So, for those who know me, you know, I grew up in Northwest Indiana / the South Side of Chicago. For those who don't know me, you know that now. I decided this week, I had taken a look. I had found a place that really caught my attention called Kays Hollow. It's out in Utah. And there was something about that location that really interested me. The problem is it was just a bunch of claims. And there wasn't a whole lot of like data to back it up. And so after spending probably about 3-4 hours looking into it, I decided, you know what, I want to get back to something that is more I don't want to use the term legitimate. I don't know what word I'm looking for off the top of my head, but more plausible that it's haunted. I know. So Kays Hollow is interesting. Look it up if you're listening. It definitely sounds like a very interesting place. I'd love to go there. But so I had two places picked out because I decided since I grew up in Indiana, in Northwest Indiana, I was going to take a look at towards Indiana and see what was back there that I maybe had missed. That's where I started investigating when I was younger. The first place that I was going to talk about, which I have moved to my second, but I'm going to give it a shout out, was Whispers Estate.
Yes.
Love Whispers Estate. I've never been there myself. But the location is still there. Amazing location, amazing evidence that has come out of that location, legitimate haunt. I will stand behind that, even though I have not been there. The people that have been there are extremely credible. The data that has come out of there, I would consider to be extremely credible. So if you are looking for a legitimate place to go see, I would say that Whispers Estate should definitely be on your checklist if you're back in the Midwest. And Mike and I have talked about road tripping for years, and we just, for between work schedules and finances and stuff, we just haven't been able to put it all together. But I know that if we do decide to road trip like to Eastern State and a few other places, and we happen to drive through Indiana, we will not be driving past Whispers Estate. We will be stopping there and checking it out.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that not where Ghost Stalkers went?
So correct. Looking for the vortex. Yes. They were there. Yes.
Where he got that great EVP telling him to be a man.
Be a man, Chad. Right. Exactly.
Chad, be a man. All right.
Yeah.
I will.
Yep. And that's where John Tenney got attacked upstairs after provoking, after he went into the kind of the attic space that there's like a double door thing and then like a little bit of a drops where the roof line drops and there's an attic space back there. And he went in there and had that chair sat down and he sat in there and got confrontational and he got attacked right outside of that room, legitimately attacked. And they documented it. He had those huge scratches up his back, which were 3 claw marks.
What I've heard of that, I mean, besides the show, watching that episode, is that is a location where not only is it active, but those spirits want to talk to you.
They
want to be heard.
Yes, they want to be heard. Absolutely. That location, it honestly, you know, we're going to put this up with, okay, and this is another one, and I'm going to do this only as a foreshadowing moment. So don't ask me to expand because I'm not going to. But we have a great show coming up on the Dumas, D-U-M-A-S, brothel. It's going to be a phenomenal show, great location, extremely haunted, and we're working on getting a real special guest that has been there numerous times, and she is going to blow your mind. And so that is coming up along with our other incredible shows. But we could do a whole show on Whispers Estate. And so that's kind of why I decided after Mike took 37 minutes to do his first one that I was going to pass this
There's no I in team, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Okay, team. You're right. Sorry. Okay. So after we got really involved in the first topic that Mike brought up, that I'm going to pass on Whispers of State because I think Whispers of State deserves more than 10 minutes. So, all right, let's get started. My location, 3860 Carolina Street, Gary, Indiana. If everybody doesn't know the address, that is the location where LaToya Ammons and her three children were terrorized to the point where they brought in caseworkers. Well, actually, caseworkers were brought in. They didn't bring in caseworkers. Caseworkers from the state of Indiana were brought in because they felt that that there was a large potential of the children getting abused. The Hammond, Indiana Police Department and the Gary, Indiana Police Department, not at first, but eventually in a cooperative type of situation, went to the location many times because there were claims of things that were so outrageous that it was kind of one of those things where they just needed to go see it. And then the Archdiocese of Gary, Indiana, actually sent priests to the location and witnessed and documented activity that couldn't possibly happen. It couldn't, you know, the things that were happening couldn't happen. So I'll throw some of the claims out there. The children were seen, not only reported, but seen levitating out of their beds. They were seen by numerous individuals, doctors, caseworkers, officers, policemen, priests, levitating out of their bed. Dead of winter, swarms of black flies would swarm around the house. There'd be unexplained footprints, numerous sizes, in the snow, in the grass, in the dirt, around the house, into the house, all throughout the year. And also with that, numerous apparitions, multiple sizes seen throughout the house. When I first heard about this case, I shook my head like there's just no way. There's no way this is happening. While there was a priest there and the chief of police of Gary, Indiana, and two caseworkers, one of the children started speaking in multiple languages. And coming from, and for people who don't know what Gary, Indiana is, it used to be a thriving community back in the day because of the Gary Steel Mills. And that's where all of America's steel was made. All of the big steel mills were there. Bethlehem Steel, United States Steel, everything that was made in America made out of steel was made in Gary, Indiana, which was literally right next door to where I grew up. And then it collapsed and all of that went overseas. So the area and community became extremely depressed. Yeah, extremely depressed financially. You know, I mean, it happened overnight. I mean, it was like, hey, everybody's making a good wage. Everybody's doing okay. We're really thriving here. And then literally within like a year, nobody was employed, you know, and there was no other jobs to be had. And it became really, really bad, like a really, really bad situation. So that's why Gary, Indiana was named the murder capital, not only of Indiana, but of the Midwest. And also it ranked in the top 5 or 10 of the United States of America for many years. There was just a lot of stuff going on. So anyway, so while the individuals were at the house at this location, they witnessed one of the boys, one of the sons, speaking in tongues, speaking in multiple languages like Latin, Arabic, things that they didn't recognize at all. And when they tried to get to the kid and talk to the kid, they went into his room and they were trying to like, thinking maybe he was just having like a, according to what I read, a seizure. I've never had a seizure myself, and I'm not saying that this couldn't happen, because maybe if you have a seizure, maybe you start speaking Latin, maybe you start speaking ancient Arabic. I don't know. But my logic is going to tell me that that's not going to happen. I'm kind of thinking if you have a seizure, you're just kind of going to get quiet and you're going to vibrate a little bit and maybe your eyes are going to roll back in your head kind of thing. But anyway, so while they went in the room and they were trying to talk to this young man, he stared at them for a couple of seconds, and then he proceeded to walk off of his bed and onto the wall, which was a vertical surface, and started to walk up the wall and made it four or five steps up the wall before gravity pulled him back down to the bed. So I'm not sure how that happened, but it was witnessed by a bunch of individuals. Any questions so far?
This is the demon house, isn't it?
It is the demon house. Yeah. I know, and that's why I didn't tell you that ahead of time. I just gave you the address.
Well,
because I knew this. Like I knew this would close out
from
the show.
From your second sentence, I knew what you were talking. As soon as you said Gary, Indiana, I'm like,
But here's the beauty part about this case. Okay, here's the beauty part about the case. I don't believe everything that was written about it or everything that was said about it, and I certainly we have to throw in. There certainly has to be an X amount of percentage of skepticism thrown in just because of the fact, okay, and I know you're going to totally 100% agree with me, that a paranormal celebrity bought the property. I know. Are you okay? You all right? You need Kleenex? Okay. So just because of the fact that he bought the property, there has to be an amount of skepticism put into place. And I totally 100% agree with that. Totally. But the fact that you had dozens, not just one, not just somebody who was on Zach's team, not just somebody who was on an editing or video crew, right? Not just somebody who was somebody in the neighborhood happened to walk by the house and saw what they thought was a kid levitating off the bed. I'm talking about credible witnesses, police officers, caseworkers for the state of Indiana, the police chief of Gary, Indiana, a couple of different priests who actually took enough evidence back to the Archdiocese of Indiana, to the Catholic Church, and got the permission to do an exorcism. And you and I both know how difficult that is and what kind of proof you need to have. You don't, you know, the Archdiocese is not going to say, oh, well, Jesus, Zach Bagan showed up. Well, of course it's a demonic house. We're just going to go ahead and we're just waive all of our thousands of years of rituals and needing to prove things before we put our name on the line. And we're just going to go ahead and just say, go ahead, perform an exorcism. You know that that didn't happen.
Now I think you misunderstand my irritation. I'm not saying that it's not a credible case or that these incidents did not happen because Zach Bagans bought this property and turned it into a whatever he tried to do. I just don't like the fact that it turned into something that he got involved in. That's all.
I agree. And I'm with you on that. I don't like to, and it's not him. It's anybody. It could have been any paranormal thing. I mean, I don't care. I don't care that it was Zach. I don't care that it would have been anybody. I think You know, we talk about portals all the time, right? And vortexes and like things that exist on our plane that we try to document. Okay. I think legitimately with the amount of evidence that came out of there, and I have not seen Zach's documentary, and I'm not going to claim that that is a be all end all. I haven't seen it. And I'm not even going there with my claim as this being one of the places that, that, is going to last forever in the state of Indiana.
Well, it's not last. It didn't last past 2017. He demolished it.
Well, he did. Yeah, he demolished it. He bought it in 2014, and right after he got done filming, he demolished it. But, that would mean that if the activity ceased, and I'm only going here as the activity was legitimate. So if the activity ceased, then the activity was tied to the actual structure, not to the property, right? Not to the land. If the activity has not ceased, but they just don't want to talk about it anymore, then the fact that the house is gone is irrelevant. It wouldn't make any difference because the land would still hold the energy.
Right. But what if it's attached to the people that moved out?
And that could also be the case. Right. But that would be interesting because it's been known as the House of 200 Demons is what it was referred to, right? Which is a substantial amount of demons, I know, right?
Yeah.
It's rare to run across one demon. They do exist. They're here. There's no doubt about it. But the House of 200 Demons? Yeah, that's an awful big claim. But I agree with you. So if it was because of the mom, LaToya Ammons, okay, and or her kids or something that happened to them prior, then, you know, when they sold the property and they moved out and Zach bought the place and he was filming, there shouldn't be a show. Right.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen the documentary either. I don't want to. I don't care enough.
I want to see it. I want to see it just because I'm interested in the property. I want to see there's so many great claims about this property. I want to see the property and I want to see, you know, if I can justify some of the claims somehow. You know, by seeing the location. I don't know. It's just something in my head is telling me I want to see it. You know, just for that reason.
Right. And I'm not saying people shouldn't see it. Maybe you should. I don't know.
Right.
I have no plans on it. I mean, I suppose that, like, if you decided to be like, hey, I got a free copy of it, you know, why don't I bring it over to your place and we'll throw it in or whatever.
Right.
Fine. Whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I have no need whatsoever to go and spend my time deliberately watching the garbage that he puts out. Pardon my harsh words.
But let's just say that, for argument's sake, that it actually was a portal.
Okay.
All right, so let's just say, excluding the fact that it was bought by a paranormal entertainer, okay? Let's just say that it legitimately was a dark portal.
Okay.
Okay. Don't you think that that should have been kind of preserved and investigated more? Because that's kind of my take on it, you know, is that, you know, what are we looking for? Like, when we go out as paranormal investigators and we run into some dark situations, and you and I personally have run into some dark situations together, and I've run into a lot of dark situations prior to meeting you. So doesn't there need to be like a baseline where you can go and say, you know what, I need to find some answers, legitimate answers about something that might be a little bit more dark, and then a location exists, And yeah, it might be a little dangerous to go there. And yeah, it might be a little scary to go there. And yeah, there might be some consequences to go there. But if you're truly trying to help, if you're truly moving forward in this field, and we just talked about this recently, 2 weeks ago, if you're really trying to move forward in this field and you're really trying to help people and you come across a location or a person who for whatever reason is experiencing that type of darkness, don't you need to have some knowledge? I mean, don't you have to have some legitimate experience to be able to help them and give them an idea of what truly might be happening instead of just guesstimating off of what we've read or what we've been showing on TV?
It's a tough question, and I think it's going to vary per person because I think you have to come to terms and figure out where the line is.
Like what your risk level is, kind of?
What you are going to be willing to give up in order to get it. Because let's just say for sake of argument that this is a portal to hell.
Okay, and that's fine. I mean, and I'm not calling it that, but let's just say it is, right? Because I think Bobby Mackey's is. So that we could throw Bobby Mackey's name in there.
So I mean, you got supposedly a portal vortex that 200 demons can come in and out of, you know, whenever they want to.
Right.
They're not going to be interested in giving you information.
Not freely.
No, I agree. And not freely, which means you have to give something up.
Yes.
So what is it worth to you? What does each person have to willingly give up in order to advance themselves in the field? I personally don't think that it's worth giving up anything. Like, I would go in there and I would be like, I do what I always do. I'd be like, hey, I know you hate me.
The paranormal cooler would show up and he'd be like, hey, you guys might be demonic as hell, but you know what? I don't really care. I just want to talk to you and I'm not going to give you anything. You're not getting nothing. Right. I'm not even going to smile at you. You get nothing. Period.
You don't even get to
smell my breath. Nothing. You get nothing.
So, I mean, and they would probably hurl some things at me.
Yeah,
and
maybe. Salt shaker, rock, brimstone or something. Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't think I'd get anything. So that's just my answer, and we are completely out of time.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, I was just, you know. I really like this case. I mean, I'm sure we're going to go back to it somewhere in the future because I want to do some more research on it. I'd really like to get a hold of some people that were there and maybe have them on the show and just talk about it because I think it's a powerful case.
Okay, I agree. So that does it for Dave and I. You know, we'll be back next week. Everybody have a good night.
Night.